This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hi folks, be sure to visit my website at dr-history.com for a short personal video message, to listen to the latest stories, and to leave a comment.
Oh my goodness, look who's here. It's from the North Country, and he borrowed Santa's sleigh to get down here today. Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
Hello, buddy.
Yeah, it's beautiful out there. Cold, but sunny.
You had a great Thanksgiving.
We did. Yep. Got together with family and friends. And
who cooked the turkey?
The family and friends. Not me. It was great. Had a good time.
Good. So. And beautiful weather.
Oh, it was nice. Down in St. George.
Oh, you're making me jealous.
I know. It was nice.
Well, we missed you last week, but we had a good conversation with Ray Bagby.
Good.
And learned more about wagons in the Old West. But what are you going to talk about today?
This is the final and ending chapter of Chief Joseph and the Nez Perce Indians.
You know, let me see if I can remember. We left Chief Joseph, and they were just starting to take off on their ride, weren't they?
They had. I'm going to give a little summary, okay?
Okay, good.
So people know geographically what we're talking about. We're talking about southeastern Washington, northeastern Oregon, and across the border into central Idaho, near what we call Grangeville now, the Salmon River, the Clearwater area.
Right.
So that's the area where all this is taking place.
Okay.
Now, they were told they had 30 days to get out of the from their homelands and get to the reservation.
What was the big hurry? You never did explain that to
they
me.
Didn't. They just said, you have 30 days.
30 days? To just, me, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, just go. So they were working at that, trying. Well, during this time, there were 21 young warriors that wanted revenge. And that kind of started the battle works going. On June 17th, there was a battle at Whiteburg Creek, which was a Captain Perry, which was a complete rout of the army.
Right.
None of the Indians were killed. Now, July 11th was the Battle of the Clearwater with General Howard. And
that's the one where they were on each side of the river, and then the Indians went over on one side, etc.?
Right. Okay. Yeah. So we're going to kind of pick it up from there and right up until the end. So anyway, General Howard had deployed. He thought he was fighting about 300 first-class warriors. And so he actually went on the defensive. He deployed his troops in a huge circle, stationing himself and his staff in the middle. The general held his defense line for about 30 hours. Okay, the Nez Perce countered with an un-Indian-like tactic. All around the soldiers' defensive perimeter, the warriors dug rifle pits and built rock piles to protect themselves. Now, that's something the Indians...
that is something I did not know. But that's unheard of.
Yeah. Now, here you have an army of 600 troopers having been surrounded by about 100 Nez Perce Indians. 100.
Now, did the soldiers dig in also?
Well, they were kind of in a circle. Surrounding their general.
Oh, okay.
So I guess they dug
in. Sounds like a real brave guy.
Yeah. Anyway, and the Nez Perce horsemen would join their dug-in comrades, and the fighting went on. And this was hot. This was in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
And Chief Joseph was seen from time to time fighting as an ordinary warrior. And the soldiers cut off from water, they fought thirst as well as the Nez Perce sharpshooters.
So now the soldiers were further inland.
They were surrounded.
Oh.
They were surrounded by the Indians.
Real bright general there.
Now, there was a Sergeant McCarthy, and here's what he said, quote, "The enemy everywhere, fronting us or galloping by us, firing from horseback, musketry all around our position like firecrackers on 4th of July, howitzers booming, Gatling guns, Indians yelling, soldiers cheering, and the mules of our immense pack train braying loud enough to drown out all of the sounds, the sun on burnt necks and the thermometer somewhere around 100 and no water." That was from his journal.
How far were they from water, though?
I don't know. Because they were, you know, you'd think there'd be creeks or something close by, but evidently they weren't close enough.
Yeah.
So,
and this is up by the Clearwater.
Right. So late in the day, the Indians began kind of losing interest in the battle. They didn't have much to gain, and so they left their trenches and took off and left. Now, realizing that he was opposed only by a token force, General Howard kind of ordered his command to advance. Well, the Nez Perce warriors, they just gradually took their women and children and basically left. So anyway, the outnumbered warriors had proved themselves capable of coping with an army's battle tactics. Leaders concluded that the bands would fight better if they were integrated under the joint command of the Council of Chiefs. So they had a council meeting on July 15th to discuss what to do. Now Joseph declared himself in favor of returning south to fight for their homeland.
Where they were originally.
Right, back to their homeland. And he said, "I do not want to die in a strange land." Now, the other chiefs wanted to go, keep going east, okay, where they might form kind of a military alliance with the Crows, okay? Looking Glass was a Crow, and but it was unanimously voted.
That would have taken them over into Montana, wouldn't it?
Yes, yes. But Looking Glass was unanimously voted to be the head man, to be the chief to over the Indians there. So five bands of Nez Perce became a single group of refugees, basically. Now, so we're going to start with the retreat, all right? Now, the Nez Perce started up the Lolo Trail on July 16th, 7,000 feet. The way was blocked by boulders and trees and all this. Well, General Howard was still chasing them, and what he saw kind of figured they must have been desperate because they looked like the horses and mules were being just pushed and pushed, and some horses with broken legs laying beside the trail.
Really?
So, anyway, the Nez Perce, in just 11 days, they reached Montana, and they came out from the Lolo Canyon on July 27th, so we're still in the summer. They entered a cliffside narrows of the Bitterroot Valley and found that their way was blocked by a sturdy kind of a timber barricade, and there was a guy by the name of Captain Charles Ron. Okay, now he was manning the roadblock with only 35 soldiers, hoping to block them from...
Did he know they were coming?
He must have done somehow, because he had this roadblock set up.
I see, on the trail.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he had 35 soldiers, about 200 volunteers, and a party of Flathead Indians.
So they didn't have Verizon back in those days,
no,
so they couldn't call ahead.
They didn't. So Looking Glass, Joseph, and Whitebird went forward to ask this guy if they could pass. They just went, you know, peacefully.
Oh, they went up to the captain?
Yeah, said, and he wouldn't agree. He said, "No, I'm not going to let you go through." Well,
he only had 30 guys.
35. But he had 200 volunteers. But guess what? The volunteers decided, we've had enough. We're leaving.
Oh, they went back home.
They went back home. So the next morning, he was getting ready for a battle. And about 10 o'clock that morning, he looked up on way up on the side of the hill. And here's a bunch of Indians on horseback on the side of a cliff going past his blockade.
It didn't
They
work
just well. Went around him.
They went around him.
They just went around him. So they dropped into
that's
that.
Poor planning.
That was so. Now here they are, kind of in the Bitterroot Valley area, and there's a place called Stevensville, and they moved south along the Bitterroot Valley, 15 miles a day, and they didn't bother the settlers, and the settlers didn't bother them. General Howard, they thought, was several days behind, but he was a little closer than what they thought.
What about the guy that they went around his barricade? Did he offer any resistance whatsoever?
I kind of think he said, I'm not getting paid enough.
I see. One of those.
Yeah.
So a Barney Fife attitude.
I'm just going to stay right here.
I see.
So anyway, they crossed the Continental Divide into the Big Hole Valley, and that's not too far from the Salmon River.
Right.
And they were resting, grazing the herds, and just kind of taking it easy. Then there was a Colonel John Gibbon, 163 soldiers, 35 volunteers. They spotted the Indians in the Big Hole Valley. And at dawn on August 9th, Gibbon's men charged on foot and caught the Nez Perce fast asleep, which kind of surprising.
That makes no sense to me
yeah,
whatsoever.
Yeah, because you're thinking, these guys have been on top of everything.
Yeah.
And how did they get caught like this? Well, the Nez Perce, it was kind of a disorganized resistance. At the eastern end of the camp, Joseph and Whitebird and Looking Glass began rallying their people. They fought. A ragged line of warriors advanced against the troops. Again, outnumbered. Now, the troops were caught in kind of a deadly crossfire from the Nez Perce snipers along the river, and soldiers were falling, and it was Colonel Gibbon who broke off the battle. He left.
Really?
Yeah.
He had 100 and...
Yeah, 163 against and maybe 100 Indians.
That's what I was wondering, yeah.
So he ordered his troops to withdraw. Well, in the end, Gibbon had lost 29 dead, and the Indians had lost 89 by their count.
Yeah.
And all but... of the Indians, 89, and all but 12 of their dead were women and children and old men.
Terrible.
Yeah, but anyway.
So it was basically a massacre.
It really was, even though they got away, sort of.
Yeah.
But the people blamed their loss on Looking Glass, because he was kind of the chief of everything right there. So in their bitterness, they resolved to treat all whites as potential enemies. Scouts reported that General Howard had allowed his Indian scouts to scalp the Nez Perce dead. Now, I think I mentioned that the Chief Joseph told his warriors, do not desecrate their bodies.
You did mention that, leave the dead alone.
Yeah. So, anyway, Howard continued to march after the Nez Perce. Olicut, which is Chief Joseph's brother.
His brother,
He raced back through the darkness with 28 warriors to Howard's camp and drove off their mules. So they went back kind of as a guerrilla warfare thing and drove off the pack mules of General Howard's.
So he was kind of afoot.
Well, yeah, they probably had some horses.
Yeah.
So August 22nd, here we are getting into the fall almost. The bands crossed Targhee Pass, zigzagged eastward through Yellowstone. A lot of people don't realize he went through part of Yellowstone.
They came quite a ways south then.
They did, yeah. And again, the young men kind of broke Joseph's rule, and they did kill a few white settlers. So anyway, while the Nez Perce were struggling through the rugged mountains east of Yellowstone, Looking Glass galloped ahead to confer with the Crow Indians. Now, the Crows had scouted for the U.S. Army, and they were kind of afraid of the U.S. Army, so they weren't in any big hurry to join up.
And this is down by Yellowstone.
Yeah, kind of east in that direction.
Yeah.
But anyway... So now they had now traveled about 1,000 miles.
What was the reason for going on such a long trek? Was it just primarily to evade?
Just to escape, because they figured if they were caught, they would just be massacred. So now next, they would try to get help from the Sioux, led by Sitting Bull, who had actually fled across the Canadian border earlier that year. They were hoping to get help. So the Nez Perce pulled themselves together, drew more heavily on the courage of Joseph, and really he was kind of their rock. He was their guardian. He was their main guy, really. So anyway, the army units from four separate commands were now converging on the fugitives, and using an old trick, the Nez Perce allowed the soldiers to see them starting toward the Shoshone River, and then they did something a little unusual. They doubled back. The bands pushed on towards Yellowstone. Now they're in Montana. There's a Colonel Sturgis who picked up their trail and closed ground. Was starting to get close to them. When Sturgis, and now here's this, 350 soldiers reached this creek. The Nez Perce sharpshooters held them off while the families hurried on. So basically, the families are keeping going. The warriors are staying to kind of block the way from the military.
And they held off almost 400.
350, yeah.
Wow.
Now, General Howard learned that the Nez Perce had escaped again. He was not happy with this. Okay, he figured they could wipe them out with no problem. But remember, he was called the Napoleon of the Indians,
yeah.
Chief Joseph.
Yeah.
So anyway, he wrote to Colonel Miles, and they departed with seven companies of infantry and a troop of cavalry.
That's a lot of guys.
We're getting a lot of guys here. Meanwhile, the Nez Perce broke out of the mountains onto the rolling terrain over there in Montana.
I have a dumb question.
Okay.
How did the soldiers or the United States cavalry, how did they know where to go and where to look for them?
You know, I'm guessing it's just kind of, maybe they could follow their tracks, or maybe, I don't know if they had scouts out watching. I mean, that's a good question. But I guess they knew where they were headed. But by this time, some of the wounded and the sick were slowing things down, and so they began kind of dropping off and maybe even dying alone.
What would they, the cavalry, what would they have done? Do you have any idea on if they would have left the sick and the wounded?
It does not say, and I would hope there was some
human interest there. Yeah.
So now we're the end of September 17th. We're kind of in north central Montana. They forded the Muscle Shell River and pushed on north. They crossed the Missouri River 8 days later. And now, by the it's starting to get cold. Cold winds starting in.
Oh, yeah.
So the end of September, the bands made camp on Snake Creek near the Bear Paw Mountains. And at this point, they have traveled 1,600 miles. They're within 40 miles of the Canadian border. So they decided to kill some buffalo and try to get some food and some warmth. Anyway, the chief did not know that Colonel Miles' troops were coming down on them. So at 6 a.m. on September 30th, the scouts spotted the Bear Paw encampment. Miles closed in with nearly 600 men, and he'd ordered his troops to charge.
Now, wait a minute. What year was this? It was after the Custer Massacre, right?
Yes, I believe so.
And wasn't General Miles one of the important generals that didn't show up to help Custer?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah. So, as I say, he's closing in. The Nez Perce saw Miles' cavalry. The warriors held their fire until the cavalry reached a range of 100 yards. One battalion had 53 casualties out of 115 men because the warriors picked them off. The officers. Well, they stopped their charge. They died for cover. Miles then threw a ring of troops around the whole camp, and the siege began. Joseph and his 12-year-old daughter Sarah were catching horses when a cavalry unit swept around them to capture the herds. Well, several Nez Perce jumped on ponies and fled north toward the Canadian border. Joseph actually put his daughter on horseback and sent her galloping after them.
Really?
Okay. So he raced through a line of soldiers back to the camp to help direct the defense. And at 1 p.m., Miles ordered a second charge, and Joseph met it head on with his warriors. But by the end of the day, Joseph knew, that the worst was coming.
And what was the casualty numbers?
I don't know at this point, but thing that kind of bothered him a lot was the loss of his beloved brother, Olicut.
Oh, he died.
This good-natured, peace-loving giant, they called him.
But did the daughter get away?
It doesn't say that if she did or not, because I think some did make it into Canada.
Now the other members of his family?
Don't know. Don't
really?
Know sure.
Kind of vague right there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here we are now. It's October 1st. And you know what the weather can be.
Up in Montana?
Storms,
cold.
Blowing in, hunger, yeah. Cold. Chief Joseph sent six of their trusted warriors to the Sioux in Canada in the hope that they could persuade Sitting Bull to come to the rescue. Well, he did not know that all six Nez Perce had been killed by hostile Assiniboine Indians. So these six guys that went to Canada,
they can't win for losing.
They were killed before they could even get to Sitting Bull. So here we are. Colonel Miles, to avoid a bigger battle, he began to negotiate with Joseph. Okay, so they're starting to communicate. Well, the Nez Perce leaders met to decide finally whether or not to give up. Joseph and Whitebird were the only chiefs left to decide the fate of the Nez Perce. Joseph chose surrender. Whitebird promised to yield also. Now, Whitebird actually slipped through the guard lines and did make his escape to Canada with 14 warriors and some of the women. So, as I say, some of them did escape.
But we don't know if Joseph's daughter made it or not.
We don't know.
Oh, my.
So, anyway, in his camp before a translator and recording officer, Joseph spoke the words that would soon touch the hearts of Americans everywhere. And I'm going to quote this and read this, Zeb. He says, "It is cold and we have no blankets. The little children are freezing to death. My people, some of them, have run away to the hills and have no blankets, no food. No one knows where they are, perhaps freezing to death. I want time to look for my children and see how many of them I can find. Maybe I shall find them among the dead. Hear me, my chiefs. I am tired. My heart is sick and sad. From where the sun now stands, I will fight no more forever."
Mm.
Just an inspirational to me. I get chills when I read that.
Well, we only have about a minute and a half left. Give me an update as to what you know historically happened to Chief Joseph.
Okay. Basically, they took the Indians to and put them on reservations, but they wouldn't put them back on the Lapway reservation. They took them to Kansas, and
that makes no sense to
me. And a lot of them died from malaria.
Oh,
and then they went into Kansas to a reservation in Kansas, and again a bunch of them died. But in hope of improving his people's situation, he actually went to Washington to try to see if they couldn't do something.
Washington, D.C.?
Yeah. Yeah, he boarded a train for the and anyway, only 118 of the Indians were permitted to rejoin their tribe on the Lapway Reservation. The other 150 were sent to Colville Reservation in Washington Territory.
Right.
Anyway, 1901, Joseph told an interviewer, "My home is in the Wallowa Valley, and I want to go back there to live." Well,
now, where did they confine him?
I think he was up in Washington as well.
I see.
But in 1904, he sat by the fire in his teepee. He suddenly fell forward, and the chief doctor said that he died from a broken heart.
Mm.
And here was a peace-loving chief.
Yeah.
To me, one of the great men of the West.
And really, I guess as a synopsis, real quick, what was the gain for the federal government in doing this?
Okay, well, remember, initially, they had 10,000 square miles of
right.
reservation.
Over on Oregon, Washington, and
Idaho
yeah,
area.
Yeah.
And then they reduced it to 1,000 because, as typically happens, the white men wanted the better land for farming, for ranching.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't say gold mining, but that probably came too. And so, as typically happened, the reservations got smaller and smaller, and then the Indian agents, you know, some were good, some were bad.
Yeah.
So
that's a sad story.
It really is. An amazing story of, to me, one of the great leaders of the Old West.
I agree.
Chief
Boy,
Joseph.
You did a good job with that historical synopsis. I like that. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.